on aging gracefully or disgracefully. There's a poem, a line of which everyone knows, whether you took literature and poetry in college or not, because it's the name of a movie right now, and that is, "This is no country for old men. I've seen the dying generation at its dance, and so I'm sailing to Byzantium." It's true of this society. This is not a society for old men and women. Differently, obviously, it's no society for old men because we tend to die, and it's no society for old women because we tend not to respect people with gray hair and wrinkles. And so we have eliminated not aging, but pretty much gray hair and wrinkles for the right price. It's kind of exterior, but I'll get more about that later. The two natural women in the front row here. Hallelujah. And somebody once asked me how my hair on the top of my head, such as it is, was dark, and I had the white sideburns, and how did I get that line? Well, it's the line of my father and the line of my mother and heredity. Aging is such an interesting, I hope, topic. There's so much ambivalence about aging in our society and in our world, and so many stereotypes that we have. We no longer automatically associate getting older with getting wiser. And there was, as actually George Will pointed out, a real change in America when 35-year-olds stopped dressing like 45-year-olds and started dressing like 25-year-olds. And it's still true. It's still true that people in my age range and even older are trying to dress like teenagers. You walk past these mall stores that are kind of niche marketed. You know, you can tell from the music who the audience is, who the customers are. You'll see people of the wrong demographic in some of those stores, because if I can't be young, at least my clothing can be young. As the line was said in Moonstruck, you know, we're still going to die, even if we have young clothes. So we've got to kind of deal with that. When I was very young, and I loved talking about young people and old people and your look, Juana, when we talked about this young musician who's probably 36 or 37, and from a certain viewpoint, remember, never trust anybody over 30, there's a whole group of people, the majority of Americans and the majority of human beings in the world, who are well under 25, and 35 is an impossibly old age. But when I was young, I thought that aging meant a couple of things. One, you started bending over some. Your voice went up kind of half an octave and started to crack a little bit. Your hair turned, in my family, orange, but that was my family. And all of a sudden, you started speaking Yiddish. And I've listened, I looked forward to getting older, developing the right accent of age and of wisdom, and eventually only speaking Mamalushan. I expected to get achy and have pains and to have a soundtrack when I got up to go, when I sat down to go, oi. I have found all of those things to be true. After three back surgeries, every little movement has a sound all its own. And I can't sneak up on anybody because of the snap, crackle, and pop of my joints and the cacophony created by my oohs and ahs and oohs. But, you know, that's acceptable. I can live with that. I also thought that when I was younger, that the worst thing in the entire world was death. I really don't believe that anymore. I really don't. Suffering is worse. Agony is worse. Losing yourself is worse. This is not a political statement of better dead than red. This is, most of us do not really fear dying as much as we fear the process, as we fear slipping away from life and losing a sense of ourselves and making the adjustments that age makes us make, either gracefully or it gets taken out of our hands. I'll get scriptural on you. When I was a child, I thought as a child, but I put away some of my toys. I understand that I have to make adjustments and accommodation with age. As I sat relaxing in Mexico with an adult beverage, watching the kids playing volleyball on the beach, and I remembered when I was a tournament beach volleyball player, incidentally, not good, just I participated in the tournaments, and that's already another sermon. Because you don't have to be good and win at everything, but you got to play. And in a sense, it's the last line of the sermon. You don't have to be good at everything, but you got to play. But I've made adjustments. I understand I won't be playing beach volleyball. I understand after 3 back surgeries, I'm not going to be surfing or body surfing. There are adjustments that you make. I have to ride a bike with handlebars up here instead of handlebars down there, because when I get off of a bike with handlebars down there, I stay down there and start going over to have lunch and say, well, I'll be with you in a while. I consulted my doctor because I was a little concerned with this pharmacopoeia that was growing in my medicine cabinet. And the doctor said, you got to figure that past the age of 40, it's one medicine for every decade. So if you are in your 60s, you should have, that's your 7th decade for those of you who were not math majors, but were accounting majors. That means I can have 7 medicines in my, and depending on what you consider a medicine, I'm under my quota. I feel so proud that I only have, I think, 5. It really depends on how you categorize things that used to be prescription but now are over the counter. You make these adjustments and these compensations. Fastball pitchers have to learn to throw a changeup. We make accommodations with life, with aging, and with death. One of the things that seems to me to be true, and it's something that I've said at funerals and memorial services and as consolation on many occasions, and it seems to get very positive feedback, and I believe it is true, is that we all know what tall is and we all know what short is, but there's no magic quarter inch between tall and short. There's no magic moment between a living process and a dying process. You are not dying just because you can't body surf. You are not dying because your hair is falling out or turning gray. There is a dying process. And when most of us have a sense of relief that somebody that we love is gone, it is not relief that they stopped living, but relief that they stopped dying. And that's not a linguistic trick. That is something that is real and we intuitively understand and take comfort from. That when we put ourselves in the place of the person who was on the table and hooked up to the various drugs and medicines, we get a different feeling from when it's my wife, my husband, my mother, my father. When I have been part of end-of-life decisions, most people automatically think about, well, I can't stop this because that's my husband, that's my mother, that's my father. But when the question comes, if it were you on the table, what would you want your children to choose for you? And we come up with different answers. Now, I'm not giving you a right and wrong answer here. This is different for every person and every situation. But what I have found in 35 years in the ministry of being with people at these difficult moments of transition is that at some point, death is no longer the enemy. And in the words of the great Unitarian poet, Walt Whitman, there is this prayer of, come, lovely, soothing death, always arriving in day and night. Will no one sing a hymn of praise to thee? Then I shall sing it. And when thou must needs come, approach strong, deliver us. And in a sense, it can be deliverance. I think in our society that we confuse two things. We confuse aging and dying. And so we work an awful lot on the externals, on what the Bible called the vanity of vanities. Incidentally, that's a very bad translation, but I'm using it opportunistically because it's the one we all know. We work on our vanity so that we have our tummies tucked and our surplus fat sucked and we get our hair transplanted and we get our skin dermabraded and peeled and all those things. And I'm not attacking any of that. It's just not going to fool the angel of death. Will look really good, and God's, oh my God, it's a shame. I mean, real, looks so healthy. I expect this person to get up any moment now. This has the face and body of a 14-year-old. None of that will stay the inevitable of what is truly aging and what is truly changing. What most of us want is to stay ourselves, our deepest selves, to have the continuity of memory, to have some things that will make our eyes shine and keep us attached to the world and attached to each other. What we want is not necessarily perpetual youth. I don't want to be junior high school age again. That was way too painful. I don't even want to be college age again. I don't remember it anyway. I'm fine being what I am. I'm fine with the accommodations. I wouldn't trade the mistakes and the follies for anything because we learn by tripping. We grow when there is stress and reaction. What I want for my life and my aging is not immortality, although I love the Woody Allen line. Somebody asked Woody Allen, do you hope to achieve immortality through your work? He said, no, I hope to achieve immortality by not dying. I don't have that ambition. Maybe it's a fault of a lack of ambition on my part, but it seems to me, again, in a poet's line, if there were world enough and time enough, today wouldn't matter. This beautiful day out there, blowing cold and clear with some raindrops in the air, wouldn't matter. We could all stay home because there would be an infinite number of sunrises and sunsets and beautiful days and clear days and clouds scudding. But as we grow older, part of our wisdom is we know that what we did not know when we were 15 and 16 and 17, that there is a limit to these beautiful days, that the sunlight will not last forever. On Friday, I was very much in touch with my mortality on Friday because I drove from Encino to San Diego through the storms, and there's nothing that puts you in touch with your mortality like driving our freeways at 70 miles an hour in the rain and in the dark. And I was going there in order to do a funeral at the Point Loma Federal Cemetery, a military cemetery. The most wonderful combination, sitting up on a hill, the cold, clean wind overlooking all of Mission Bay and San Diego. And it was a San Francisco day. It was just extraordinary. And this combination of of life and death, of light and of cold. This sense that we are not apart from nature, but we are a part of nature. And as the Psalms say, we, as the grass, we grow in the morning, we flourish at noon, we wither in the afternoon, and we are cut down, and it's all a part of a natural process. We, as aging people, and everybody here, whatever your age, is aging. I know it's impossible for some to believe. There are beauties in every season that we have, and opportunities in every season that we have to live. Aging is not dying. Aging is changing. And we may have to change the focus of our passions, but we can still have our passions. We may have to push beyond the horizon of our lives, the sense that our dreams and ambitions and plans and hopes will come true. But that's why we attach ourselves to our children, to our grandchildren, to the future, because they keep us in the game. Our arteries may harden, but our hearts don't have to harden. We can still stay vital in spirit and in enthusiasm and be connected to each other and connected to the future. It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing in this society. Many people want to throw out the older people. There are movie stars who just will not appear on camera after a certain age, even when asked, which they seldom are, but even when asked, because they want that memory of them when they were young and vital. Well, you can be old and vital too. You can be older and have tremendous beauty in the wrinkles that we earn, in the hair that, I mean, my hair is in a race. The half of it trying to turn gray and half of it trying to find its ultimate home and repose in my brush. These things are part of something natural. And we surrender, I think we can surrender gracefully to that process. As Americans, we spend too much of our energy and time and money on the externals, which is not surprising, and we don't look enough at what each of us at every season has to offer, at the beauty that each of us can create and recognize and fan up in the world. Because we are older does not mean that we are on the bench. It means that we change a position or two and that we can say yes to life according to our ability and our passion. Surrendering to the process is fine. Surrendering only to the weakness, only to the fatigue, is not fine. Sit down when we need a rest. God knows I do. When my back is acting up as it does, I sit down. You take a break, but you come back. You don't let it sit on you and keep you bent. You keep moving forward because this light, this day, all of these lives that we share in here today, all of these lives that we touch by our actions, by the good things that we do, make a difference in the universe, make a difference to each other. Our power to create and to love and to inspire is not diminished, just the opposite. We learn better how to be with each other, how to share time together. We learn the wisdom of age, which is, we don't have to fix everything. We can just sometimes keep people company. We don't have to have the answer to all of our friends' problems. Part of wisdom is knowing when to hold them, knowing when to fold them, and knowing when to walk away, and knowing when to, okay, limp. But we can come and just be with people and say to each other the most fundamental statement that is biblical that I sign on to completely, and that is when you come in to a room of somebody who has a problem, you don't have to solve it. You just say, I'm here. I'll keep you company. I'll hold your hand. I'll send you a flower. I'll send you a card. Believe me, the power to heal that we have with each other and to heal our world is enormous just by being present and vulnerable and real with each other.